VOA, the science edition of Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome to the science edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. December 1st marks the 30th World AIDS Day. According to its organizers, this annual international event provides the opportunity for people everywhere to band together in the battle against HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, to support those who live with the virus, and to remember those who have died from AIDS-associated illnesses. HIV is the acronym for the Human Immunodeficiency Virus, which attacks and destroys cells of the immune system, making it difficult for our bodies to fight infections and even certain types of cancer. AIDS is short for Acquired Immunodeficiency Syndrome and is the most advanced stage of HIV infection. Those suffering from AIDS are subjected to an increasing number of serious illnesses called opportunistic infections. Thanks to new treatments developed over the years, testing positive for HIV today is not necessarily the kind of death sentence it once was. Doctors say that if those who are HIV positive are tested early enough and follow a strict therapeutic regimen, people can live long and productive lives. Today, we'll talk about the progress that has been made to help those with HIV/AIDS, as well as the ongoing fight to end this devastating pandemic once and for all. My co-host for today's program is Carol Pearson. She's VOA's senior health reporter and a longtime colleague of mine. Joining us for today's program as our guest is Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Fauci, we'll soon be marking the 30th World AIDS Day. As someone who's been on the front lines of the war against HIV/AIDS, how is marking this day in 2017 different from your first observance in 1988?
Well, in 1988, we had very few tools. And when I say tools, I mean interventions for HIV. We were just 1 year into the approval of AZT, which was approved by the FDA in 1987, and then we went a few years after that before we even had the second drug. So although we did have some very rudimentary early treatment for HIV, it was very dark and dire times because we really didn't have adequate interventions in the form of treatment or medically mediated prevention. Now you fast forward to where we are now, 30 years past that first World AIDS Day, and we have extraordinary tools or interventions. We have treatments that are extremely effective. We know that when you treat an individual, you not only save their lives, but you prevent them from transmitting the infection to their sexual partners. We also have very effective pre-exposure prophylaxis. And whenever we implement these, we find that we have a major impact on HIV as the individual and in the community. So right now, the biggest challenge is implementation of the tools on a broader way. We just heard very recently that 21 million people are receiving antiretroviral therapy. We still need to do better than that, but that's an extraordinary achievement. Some countries in Africa have already reached the 90-90-90 targets that UNAIDS have set, and there are places in the United States, such as the city of San Francisco and in New York State, that are putting on a very aggressive approach to getting as many people on therapy as possible. So if you compare today on the 30th of the World AIDS Day from where we were 30 years ago, it's really transforming. I mean, the difference is stunning.
And you have said that we could end the AIDS epidemic as we know it right now with the tools we have. So right. What's preventing that?
Well, because it's very difficult logistically to get into therapy all the people who need it. We're doing a very good job of it, but there are certain segments of society, there are certain regions of the world where it's difficult to access them to get them on therapy, which is the reason why we still have an implementation gap. So in a perfect world, as I've said in the past, and I'll say it again, in the perfect world, if we could have access to everyone who's infected, put them on therapy, and get their viral load to below detectable level, we could shut down the epidemic and the pandemic as we know it now. The fact that we have difficulties logistically and technically getting to these people, accessing them, and even maintaining them on therapy that needs to be sustained, that's one of the reasons why I say, in addition to optimal implementation of the tools that we have, a vaccine, even a moderately effective vaccine to the tune of maybe 50 or 60%, would be a major contribution together with implementing the tools we have to have a durable end to the epidemic. So even though theoretically you could end it by just implementing fully the tools we have, from a practical standpoint, it's unlikely that we will be able to do that within a reasonable period of time. That could be greatly accelerated if we developed a safe and effective vaccine, even a vaccine that was moderately 50 to 60% effective.
Dr. Fauci, UNAIDS announced recently in a report that there was like a 39% decrease from the 3 million people in sub-Saharan Africa since the 1990s. HIV infections there have fallen by 48% since 2000. However, Eastern Europe and Central Asia seem to be a new hot point for
right.
HIV.
That is correct, and that's one of the issues that I was mentioning just a bit ago about how it's sometimes in certain segments of society, in certain regions of the world, it's very, very difficult to actually access people. When you have people, for example, in Eastern Europe, the Russian Federation and countries around the Russian Federation, you have an increase in the infection rate among injection drug users, among commercial sex workers, to a lesser extent among men who have sex with men. And that's a population that's a bit disenfranchised from general society. And whenever you get a population that's disenfranchised, then you have very, very much of a difficulty in controlling the spread of any infection, particularly and including HIV. There's also a very high level of tuberculosis in those individuals, another disease that tends to attack the disenfranchised segments of society.
And yet you just came back from Moscow recently for the International TB Conference. I understand that TB kills a whole lot of people, or a significant portion of people who have HIV.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at HIV, particularly in southern Africa, 30% of the deaths, at least 30% of the deaths, are due to tuberculosis, and more people are killed from tuberculosis who are HIV infected than any other cause of death associated with an HIV infection. So tuberculosis is the leading cause of death among HIV-infected individuals in southern Africa.
Dr. Fauci, from what I understand, medical officials were very successful in Africa in fighting the recent Ebola epidemic. And what my question is the outbreak was stemmed back due to the fact that there was a great public awareness and a public campaign to help fight the disease. Why isn't the same true for HIV/AIDS?
Well, again, the reason with HIV is that if you look at the Ebola, it was a major concentrated crisis where people acutely got very ill. And when people finally realized that if you identify, isolate, and contact trace, you can stop the spread of the infection. When you're dealing with a sexually transmitted disease where people who look and feel well are transmitting the infection, it's very difficult to get to those people and identify them and prevent them from infecting others. Whereas with Ebola, Ebola is transmitted only when a person is extremely ill. I mean, there are exceptions. It could be transmitted sexually at times following recovery, but the overwhelming spread is from one very sick person to someone who comes into contact with their body fluid. So if you put a concerted effort in identifying, isolating, and contact tracing the way we did in West Africa, then you can, within a reasonable period of time, put an end to the epidemic. And that's exactly what happened. That's very, very different from the way HIV is spread.
Stigma prevents a lot of people from seeking help. Now, there used to be a huge stigma against having HIV. But, you know, in South Africa, for example, you've got 4 million people on treatment. Is there still a huge stigma against being treated for HIV in Africa?
It's less than it was. The stigma associated with HIV infection is less, but it's still present and is still a factor. Not only the stigma of being infected and taking medications, but also the stigma associated, for example, with populations, special populations like gay men. I mean, there are several countries in Africa in which being gay is actually against the law. It's punishable by imprisonment or even worse. So there are different types of stigma. There's the subtle stigma associated with someone who might be taking a medication, and there's the more egregious stigma against people who are at risk, such as gay men.
Dr. Fauci, do you think this stigma is partially responsible for the rise in HIV infections in Eastern Europe and Central Asia?
Stigma is always a negative factor when you're talking about spread of disease. So the answer to your question is yes. Stigma is fueling, at least in part, the outbreak in countries in Eastern Europe. No doubt about it. Whenever you have stigma, you always have an acceleration of spread of diseases because the people who need the help, who need the counseling, are usually not getting it because of the stigma associated with it.
And yet stigma, there's also a stigma against having TB, isn't there?
Well, in some respects, yes. There are a number of diseases in which there's a stigma associated with it. Sometimes the stigma is more intense depending upon the disease. But yes, there is stigma associated with disease such as tuberculosis, and it's been that way historically for a long time.
You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab at our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. We'd also like to hear from you. You can connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA, or you can send us an old-fashioned email to PCUSA@voanews.com. We'll be back with more of our program after this.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
We're back with today's Science Edition of Press Conference USA. I'm Rick Pantaleo. As we prepare to mark the 30th World AIDS Day on December 1st, we're discussing the progress that has been made to help those with HIV/AIDS, as well as the ongoing fight to end this devastating pandemic once and for all. I'm joined in studio by my longtime colleague and VOA senior health reporter, Carol Pearson. Our guest today, joining us by telephone, is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, located just outside of Washington, D.C., in Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Fauci, I remember back in the mid-1980s, during the early days of the pandemic, hearing about the medication AZT, which was an early and prominent drug used to treat HIV. Is the drug still being used today?
In some segments, yes, but for the most part, we've gone beyond AZT. The triple combinations of drugs that are recommended as first line in the United States do not contain AZT. And in most of the countries of the world, the combinations of drugs that are available do not include AZT. So AZT has seen its day. It is no longer a primary drug for HIV.
Looking back, there used to be this very complicated regimen of drugs that you had to take if you were HIV positive. That's changed too, hasn't it?
Well, it certainly has. When I was taking care of patients in the late 90s after we had the triple combinations, when you had to take three separate drugs with multiple doses of each drug multiple times a day, sometimes people had to take 15, 20 and more pills, and they had to take it some with meals, some after meals, some without having any food in their stomach, sometimes well into the night. It was very, very difficult and not user-friendly to take the multiple pills. Today, you take one pill. You wake up in the morning, you take one pill that contains three drugs in it, and that's it for the day. So it is much, much more user-friendly today to take antiretrovirals than it was back when I was treating patients years and years ago.
Dr. Fauci, medication-wise, how accessible and what are the costs related? Is it more accessible cost-wise as well to people in developing nations?
Yeah, well, in the developing nations now, we've made great progress in making available generic versions of drugs. So even though years ago the drugs were very expensive there, right now you can get a triple combination for, you know, $100, $150 and sometimes less.
Dr. Fauci, you mentioned disenfranchised populations and how difficult it is to get people who are HIV positive in these groups on their medication and get them to take it consistently. And you also mentioned San Francisco. Can you tell us what's going on in San Francisco that has helped control the HIV spread in these populations?
Well, San Francisco has been very proactive in their addressing HIV epidemic. They have a program called the RAPID program, R-A-P-I-D. And in the RAPID program is a combination of things that you do to aggressively seek out, identify people who are infected, get them tested, get the result immediately. If they're positive, immediately put them on therapy, follow them up carefully to make sure they stay on therapy, stay in contact with them with cell phones, but go out into the community to get the people who normally would not step forward and be tested for a variety of reasons. Go to homeless populations, people in the street, gay bars, places like that. So to get people, identify them, and put them on therapy, that is having a major positive effect in decreasing the incidence of HIV infection in San Francisco.
What about the transmission of HIV/AIDS? Are there any new technologies in place today that would help someone who has HIV/AIDS or just HIV keep them from spreading it to another person?
Yeah, the best way to keep them from spreading it is to get them on therapy and get the viral load to below detectable level. And we know that if you are undetectable, you are in essence untransmissible. So the best way to get someone not to spread who's infected is to put them on adequate therapy and get the viral load to below detectable level.
You also mentioned PrEP, but we didn't go into an explanation of what that is. Could you please?
Yeah. PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis, and we now know from very good studies that if you take a single pill of Truvada, which is a combination of tenofovir and emtricitabine, and you give it to a person who's at risk and they take it every day, that can decrease by more than 97%. In fact, 97% the likelihood that they would acquire infection. And in fact, the number of cohort studies in which you look at people who are receiving PrEP compared to comparable groups who are not receiving it, there have been essentially no infections in some of those studies in the people who are taking PrEP. So it's very effective. It's well over 95% effective if you religiously take the drug every day.
And that's another factor, too, isn't it?
Right. You have to make sure you take the drug, because adherence is an issue that if you don't adhere to the regimen, then you're not going to get the full benefit from it.
How close, Dr. Fauci, how close are we to actually getting a vaccine to fight HIV?
Well, that's something you just can't predict. Of course, there are still scientific discoveries that need to be made. There is a vaccine trial that's going on right now in South Africa that is looking at the same sort of a vaccine platform that had a modest response in Thailand with a 31% efficacy, which is not good enough for prime time, not good enough for deployment of the vaccine, but it was a start in which we're trying to improve upon, and that trial is going on in Africa right now. I cannot predict when we'll have an HIV vaccine because we still don't have enough scientific data to make that kind of prediction.
And that's a huge trial, the one in South Africa, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when do they expect any kind of results?
It'll probably be at least another 2.5-3 years.
Dr. Fauci, using modern technology to develop treatments and a possible vaccine, is genetic engineering being used in any way?
Well, genetic engineering is being used in an experimental way to see if you can, quote, cure people with HIV. Mm-hmm. That is something that is still scientifically very aspirational. I don't think it's going to be something that could be widely used in trying to manipulate cells of an individual and reinfuse them back. It's scientifically very interesting and very elegant, but the answer to your question is it's being tried, but it's very, very early on in the experimental process.
I'd like to go back to looking at AIDS orphans and mother-to-child transmission. Now, there was a point in time when villages in sub-Saharan Africa were just decimated, but then they were able to come up with a way of preventing mother-to-child transmission and also to get people on treatment, which reduced the number of AIDS orphans. But we're still seeing this, aren't we?
Well, we are, but we're doing better and better. We know now by a number of very good studies that if you treat a pregnant woman and get her viral load to below detectable level, you can essentially eliminate the transmission from the mother to the child. Not 100%, but very close to that. So right now, at the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018, we can say that we can shut off mother-to-child transmission. If you get women who are infected on therapy, if they're pregnant, you keep them on therapy. When they deliver, you keep them on therapy. And when they, finally baby is born healthy, uninfected, and you just keep going and keep the mother on therapy. So getting the viral load to below detectable level in the mother is highly effective in preventing infection in a baby.
Dr. Fauci, how effective have been the push to make sure that AIDS, HIV people take their medication, make sure that they follow the daily regimen? Has that been successful?
Well, I think the adherence has been reasonably good. I mean, obviously, for a number of reasons, human nature is such that some people stop taking it for a variety of reasons. Sometimes they're stockouts. They don't have medication available to them. Sometimes they just stop because they have degrees of toxicity that they don't appreciate the importance of staying on therapy. But for the most part, adherence has been very good in individuals who are infected. The individuals that we have trouble with adherence are those that trying to prevent infection because they're well and they're uninfected, and the incentive to continue taking a medication is sometimes less compelling than people who are already infected.
I'd like to revisit a comparison between HIV/AIDS and the Ebola epidemic. There was a whole cultural shift in the Ebola epidemic that helped prevent its spread. I mean, people washed their hands, they didn't hug each other, they didn't shake hands. And, it seems to me that there has to be a cultural shift in order to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic. For instance, there has to be more of a recognition of the rights of women and girls and the ability of women and girls to protect themselves from getting the virus.
Certainly, but those kinds of cultural shifts are much, much, much more difficult than the cultural shifts that were made in West Africa. People realized that if they did not wash their hands, if they did not take care when they were burying individuals who were infected, that they were going to get infected. It was very acute, and it was very, very pronounced. It's very subtle, the kinds of difficulties in society that don't yet empower women. That's something that doesn't change overnight. It needs to change, but it is much more difficult than getting somebody to wash their hands during the middle of an Ebola outbreak. So I don't think it's comparable. I think we do need the cultural change of respecting women and giving women more rights. That will be very helpful in certain countries to quell the HIV epidemic, but that is something that does not change very easily.
UNAIDS, in their report, said that in sub-Saharan Africa, 67% of new HIV infections among young people were among young women and girls between the ages of 15 and 24. So it would seem like this is a significant number, and this number should produce some sort of change in the way people look at the vulnerabilities of young girls.
You would hope it would, but it's frustrating and it doesn't. That's the point. People are working on trying to get people aware of the vulnerability of women, but one of the best ways to do that is to try and get women on a pre-exposure prophylaxis and treating the men who are infecting them, identifying them, and getting their viral load to below detectable level. It's quite clear that women are very vulnerable, but there has not yet been much success in diminishing that vulnerability, unfortunately.
How important is it for people to go to their doctors and get checked for HIV?
Well, it depends on where you're talking about. Are you talking about South Africa? Or are you talking about the United States?
I'm talking about the world in general.
Well, you know, it's different in different regions. I mean, if you don't have a health care system and you don't have access to health care in a region, it's going to be very difficult for someone to go to a doctor. If you do have access to health care, then you've got to educate people that they should get tested if they're at risk. And it really a great deal of variability from region to region.
One of the things that the UNAIDS report said is that there needs to be a huge shift in investment and that there has to be a global commitment. For example, the kind of commitment that South Africa has made in getting 4 million people in treatment. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly what UNAIDS has been pushing for, and that's what the 90-90-90 is all about, to get all countries involved to make sure that they make available the capability of getting 90% of the people who are infected identified, 90% of those on therapy, and 90% of those get suppressed viral load, which would get you down to 73% of the people who are infected in a particular country or particular region would have suppressed viral load. Mathematically, if you look at that as a model, that would turn around the trajectory of the epidemic. So countries should be pushing for that, and that's what UNAIDS is trying to get various countries to be aware of and to address that issue.
Dr. Fauci, I understand that HIV is an attack on the human immune system. You have mentioned medications and various therapies that are prescribed for HIV sufferers. Are there any other types of things that HIV patients can do to cut down on the virus? In other words, to boost their immune system?
The answer is no. If you are on antiretroviral therapy and you bring down the level of virus to below detectable level, that's where you want to be. There have been a number of attempts of infusion of various cytokines to boost the immune system, and they've not been successful. The best way to boost your immune system is to get the level of virus down very low.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always good talking to you.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, located just outside of Washington, D.C., in Bethesda, Maryland. And that's all the time we have on this science edition of Press Conference USA. Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank my colleague and VOA senior health reporter, Carol Pearson, for co-hosting and helping us put together today's program. Also thanks to our studio technician, Carl Starling. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.